Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Deadhead Cannabis Show. This is Jim Marty reporting from the Northeast Cannabis Conference in Boston, put on by the National Cannabis Industry Association. And I've got my partner, Larry Mishkin, out in Chicago. How are you doing there, Larry?
Jim, I'm doing just fine. We're having a beautiful day in Chicago, which always makes it nice, cold, but beautiful, nice and sunny.
A beautiful day in Boston as well.
Yeah, well, I love going to those conferences, especially in Boston. My son lives out there, so I'm envious of you. I hope you're having a great time.
I am. I've been traveling around the state and talking to clients. You know, it's regulatory hell, actually. Larry, you can relate to this, but people have said there's more adult-use dispensaries open in Illinois in 3 months than there has been in Boston opened in 3 years since they got adult use. So we still have a situation of very few retail. I believe there's only one in Boston proper for a city of millions. And still a big shortage of product. I was with a client yesterday who's been at it for 2 years. And he hopes to get his, what they call his provisional license in March next month, which means he'll be able to start building out his cultivation.
Oh, wow.
And if all goes well, he hopes to have his plants in the ground by the end of 2020 with the first harvest in the first quarter of 2021. So it's a very long and slow process here, heavily regulated. The building permits take forever. The costs are double and triple what I'm used to seeing in other states like Missouri and Colorado. I was at a place yesterday where, including the building itself, it was going to come in close to $500 a square foot. So what is that? 50,000 square feet was the facility, you know, five times five. So $25 million to build out a 55,000 square foot cultivation. And I'm doing the math in my head, just figuring how long is it going to take to get that return on investment back?
Oh, God, forever. I mean, I shouldn't say that. But yeah, that's an incredible amount of upfront cost. And while I feel sorry for my friends in Massachusetts, you know, that's a good thing to know. And that would be good for people in Illinois to know, because, of course, you know, we're experiencing shortages and long lines here still, too. So it's nice to know that there's a group out there that's looking at us and thinking we're doing it right. So that's always positive. But, yeah, you know, we're coming along here. We're in the middle still of our next round of applications for craft grow and manufacturing and transportation. Those are all due by March 16th. So things are starting to get a little crazy on this end as everybody tries to pull it all together. We do have the social equity component, and so we have a lot of people trying to figure out how to work around the social equity. And when I say work around, I don't necessarily mean to avoid having social equity people, but one of the rules in Illinois requires the social equity applicant to own 51% and control the company, and it becomes a problem when you're the 49% owner and you're the one putting in 100% of the money. So we have to try and, you know, come up with different ways to smooth that over and make it all work out while still staying true to the spirit and the intent of the law, which I think we're doing a pretty good job of doing. So it's all very exciting. And I'll tell you, one of the things that's going on here right now, Jim, that surprised me, because, you know, this is the type of thing that typically doesn't get start talking about in an adult use state for a couple of years. But in Illinois right now, there is a lot of talk about public smoking lounges. And everyone's surprised, the actual adult use bill allows for public smoking lounges, but it puts a very big if on there, and the if is that you have to have the consent of the local municipality. And so far it's been very difficult to locate any municipalities that are willing to give a green light to public consumption lounges. Now, Lori Lightfoot, the mayor of Chicago, has indicated that she thinks it would be a good idea for Chicago, but we still haven't seen it happen yet. I know groups that are going out to some of the smaller communities and talking to them out there, kind of, hey, look, you'll draw people into your community. They're going to want to go get something to eat in one of your restaurants. They'll buy gas for their drive home, whatever the case may be. But, of course, it's raising a very interesting question for us, which is, do dram shop laws apply the public smoking lounges, because the difference will be that at the public smoking lounge, the owner cannot sell marijuana. You have to bring your own to the lounge and smoke it there. So it's not really quite the same as a bartender giving you another drink for their profit after you're too drunk. But I'm willing to bet that the first time somebody leaves one of those lounges and has a car accident, we will see some aggressive plaintiff's attorney trying to rope in the owner of the lounge. So insurance considerations are very big with that, too.
Yes, well, that's a lot of topics that you covered there. Starting back where you started, you know, Massachusetts does have a social equity program. It does not apply to the existing medical marijuana license holders, but it does help the people who are applying for adult use get extra points both at the state and the local level. In fact, I just heard an absolutely hair-raising story of a young man who was importing marijuana to the East Coast from California when he was a young man, 21 years old, and you know, everything was going just fine. He was doing it to support his parents who were out of work at the time, and a few years go by, and he gets a license here in Massachusetts to open a medical marijuana business. And then one day the feds kicked his door in. He ended up getting 5 years. He served 3.5. But one of my clients is going to put him on their board of directors for their social equity component. I also went to a very interesting dinner last night called the LPP, the Last Prisoner Project. I don't know if you've heard of that, Larry.
I have.
But the concept is, number one, to get nonviolent marijuana offenders or other low-level drug offenders out of jail. And then once they're out of jail, try to get their records expunged. And so they had a dinner last night here in Boston. They had a full room and a lot of really neat people here. So that was a good experience. So, yes, I'm learning about...
Interesting. We have a... We have a similar thing here in Illinois, Jim, where the social equity only applies to your application for an adult use license. And everybody, of course, is looking for their social equity applicants, who can team up with them and do it. But you touch on a funny thing, because one of the ways in Illinois you can be social equity is if you were previously a victim of the war on drugs. And a victim is anyone who was arrested. You don't even have to be convicted, but if you were arrested for a misdemeanor or class 4 felony marijuana offense with no violence involved, A, it's subject to complete expungement under the act, and B, that gives you your social equity bonus points. So now we have the unique situation of guys going home and telling their mom, hey, mom, you know how embarrassed you were for all those years because I had a marijuana conviction? Guess what? That's my golden ticket to getting a license.
Yes, that's very true. And there was no shortage of convicted felons at my dinner last night. So, Larry, if you're looking for some people to qualify for social equity, I would recommend going to the lastprisonerproject.org website, and maybe they can put you in contact with some people who are looking to line up with adult use in Illinois.
Sure. No, that's a great thing. And, yeah, it's we could talk for hours about this, you know, and everything that's going on behind the scenes with these social equity situations. I applaud the idea. If it works, I think it's great. We'll just see what natural human tendency is in terms of how they're going to actually run these businesses down the road and what the backlash may or may not be. In Chicago, there's a lot of pressure right now to get companies with ownership that include people of color. So there's a lot of people watching this round that's out there right now to see how it turns out. It's going to be a big thing.
Here in Massachusetts, there's been some very vigorous debates on the wholesale and retail prices and, you know, what is the forecast, which really applies to our business at Bridge West because we do a lot of five-year forecasting. And you know, very vigorous debate and differences of opinion. Right now, wholesale is $3,500 to $4,000 a pound. And then at retail, with your $50 ACE here in Massachusetts, $6,000 to $6,500 at retail. So very high prices. And the big question is, you know, will prices come down and when? And the future, of course, is very hard to predict. But some people say that even if all these license holders get issued, you know, 50 and 100,000 square foot cultivation license, it's still going to be 3 or 4 years before they get to capacity. As one gentleman was saying, that right now there's about 4 million square feet of cultivation in Massachusetts, and he figures just to meet demand and stop the shortages, that number should double to 8 million square feet of cultivation. So there's plenty of room for these 100,000 square, I call them 100,000 square footers, 100,000 square foot of canopy is your max here in Massachusetts. So anyway, that's what's been going on with me. I'm having a very interesting time here in Boston and seeing a lot of old friends and seeing a lot of clients. So it's been a very productive week.
I want to take a quick break to thank you for listening to today's show and to invite you to listen to all the other great MJ Bulls cannabis podcasts, like Raising Cannabis Capital, the show which features cannabis entrepreneurs that are raising money to expand their organization. Tune in each week on Thursdays and Sundays to hear founders of awesome cannabis companies talking about their business and their fundraising plans. Who knows? Maybe you'll discover the future Amazon or Apple of cannabis on the Raising Cannabis Capital podcast.
Switching over to our other side of the table for a minute, I know that you and I were talking and you had indicated to me that you too recently received your copy of Dave's Picks 33, the newest one in the Dave's Picks series. And one of the things we were talking about, Jim, is this show that they put out from Northern Illinois University in DeKalb, Illinois, which is about 2 hours west of Chicago, towards the Iowa border. Northern Illinois has a great reputation as a school that's very pro-debt and pro-cannabis and all this other stuff. And this is a 1977 show, and I think you would agree with me that it's probably one of the better dead shows that that they've ever cranked out. And it's wonderful that we can now get clean copies of it from the dead.
Yeah, a standout show and a standout year for the Grateful Dead. And yeah, I've been listening to it out in my barn with a good sized volume and a good volume on it. And yeah, Jerry's just absolutely soaring. Especially during the first set, Ramble on Rose, one of the probably best Ramble-ons ever. As I read the liner notes back in the tape trading days, this was one of the most sought-after dead shows that people had recorded back in the time, around the time they were actually played.
Yep, and I believe it. I want to say that somewhere in my dusty, moldy collection of cassette tapes of dead shows that I have a copy of this one, but I haven't gone looking yet. But yeah, this is just such a tremendous show. The Dead is completely at the top of their game. Jerry is just killing it all the way around. And you're right, that Ramble on Rose is amazing. The first set closes with a great, must have been the Roses into Let It Grow. But for me, I think the highlight of the show is in the second set, about halfway through, before the drums in space. They kick into an estimated profit eyes of the world that's as good as any I've ever heard. Those 1977 eyes that Jerry was playing are just standout.
Yes, I love the eyes of the world. It's certainly one of my favorite Dead tunes, and that's an excellent, excellent version. So I also have been enjoying that very much. Now, Larry, I understand you have another speaking engagement this afternoon, and then I have a special guest. But Larry, you go first and tell us what you're doing this afternoon.
I will. Thank you, Jim. Yeah, I have to hop off here in a minute because I have to head out to the western suburbs of Chicago. I'm going to be a presenter today at the Building Owner and Management Association of the Chicago area. And they've asked me to come out and talk because we have a lot of commercial property owners who are being approached by groups that want to, that need space for their cannabis facilities. We're about to have 75 new dispensaries come online, 40 new craft grows, 40 new manufacturing facilities. They're all going to need real estate. And it makes sense that obviously people in the industry are interested in getting involved in it, but at the same time, just leery enough of what the status is that they want to be educated. So it's a good thing. We desperately need property owners who will do this. And I'm looking forward to going out there and having a chat with these guys today and hopefully getting all their questions answered for them so we can create some additional space for our businesses.
Well, very good. I can tell you, in Massachusetts, the most desirable places are being snapped up because, especially for retail, your best retail locations with the proper zoning, there's not that many places that qualify, too close to a school, et cetera. Here's an interesting twist. In Massachusetts, they count a karate judo school as a school that can zone you out of a shopping center.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yes, I have a client. I won't say the name of the town, but his issue is there's a judo studio within 1,000 feet of where he wants to open a retail shop. So good work out there on the real estate, because it is a real estate intensive industry. And with the setbacks and the zoning, even in a big state like Illinois, your options of where you can open up can be very limited.
That's true. And in fact, in the city of Chicago, you know, it's so dense with population and with schools and churches and everything that just like they did with the medical round, the Board of Aldermen in Chicago modified the zoning to make it a 500-foot limit, because there's really no place in Chicago you can be practically and not be within 1,000 feet of a church or a school.
Right, right. And here it's even a little more restricted, because it's not the front door, which sometimes can squeeze you in. If the front door turns out to be 1,000 square feet away, or if it's close, you can just move that front door. Here in Massachusetts, it's property line to property line. So it makes it even more difficult to properly zone real estate.
Yes, it does. Yep, we got the same problem here. And, you know, luckily the city has been cooperative in this regard. We haven't gotten too much blowback from that. So the folks in the city will get to do what they do. Out in the suburbs, there's a little more room. But for us right now, the key is finding municipalities that have not opted out and that are willing to allow people to come in. And really, that's where these real estate guys, you know, make their money. I know if they're long-standing property owners in a municipality, a lot of times they have the pull to be able to go in and talk to the city manager or the mayor and help convince them that, you know, this isn't such a bad thing and they should let it happen in their community. So we really, we like them. We get them behind us so that they understand what's going on. And, you know, hopefully they can go out there and help us locate these properties so everybody can be all set to go.
All right, Larry, well, I'll let you go, and then I will be continuing this podcast from the expo floor here at the New England Cannabis Conference, and I will have as my special guest, Bethany Moore of the National Cannabis Industry Association.
Well, it sounds like a great interview, Jim. I'm a big fan of NCIA. I know Bethany. Please say hello to her for me. And like all the other listeners, I'll have to download this episode of the podcast to hear what she has to say.
Very good. So we'll let you go, Larry. And this is Jim Marty. And I will be taking a quick break here while I get set up to interview Bethany.
Thanks, Jim. Have a great time out in Boston.
All right. So, well, Bethany, nice to have you as a guest here on the Deadhead Cannabis Show. You work for the National Cannabis Industry Association. And can you tell us a little bit about what you do and what your organization does?
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. Thanks so much for having me on your show today as well. As you mentioned, I work at the National Cannabis Industry Association. I've been here for a little over 6 years. I started here in January of 2014, which we all know was when Colorado and Washington rolled out their adult use 21 and up cannabis laws, which was so exciting as an activist from the medical marijuana standpoint to see this happen. NCIA has existed since 2010 as an organization and now represents nearly 2,000 cannabis businesses and ancillary businesses across the country. What we do mainly is advocacy at the federal level. We have a awesome government relations team in DC. They are hitting the pavement, talking to members of Congress on behalf of the businesses in the cannabis industry year-round, lobbying on our behalf for changes to cannabis policy reform that are desperately needed, like safe banking access and tax reform to 280E of the IRS code and other pieces of legislation that help this industry continue to move forward and be treated fairly, just like any other industry that operates in the United States.
Excellent. Excellent.
That's basically the big picture. There's a lot more that we do, too. We've got national conferences across the country, too, for people to come learn and hear from experts. And we do regional networking events across the country and have a lot of great resources on our website as well.
Yes, I've been a member of your organization, I think, pretty much since the beginning when I met the executive director, Aaron Smith. And, yeah, you do a lot of great things. Your conferences are very informative, a great place to find out what's happening, the latest and the greatest. Now, 2020 is an election year. What are some of the NCIA's goals for 2020?
Well, we would like to get a cannabis-friendly presidential candidate in as our president. So we'll be handling that toward the end of the year. Really, what's in front of our plates here, the biggest thing, the Safe Banking Act, which is a standalone piece of cannabis legislation, passed through the House of Representatives last year. This is huge news. It's first time this has happened in this kind of way. So now it's in the Senate. And right now we're monitoring that process as they're hopefully not making more edits to that bill. We want to make sure the bill protects the cannabis industry in the right way. And we'd like to get it passed through the Senate and signed into law. This would absolutely expand cannabis businesses having access to safe banking. It would give banks more freedom to work with the cannabis industry without fear. So this would create an incredible new relationship between the cannabis industry, which is really cash heavy right now because of this banking problem. And there's a myriad of problems related to it being a cash-heavy industry. I think we all know having a lot of cash floating around can attract criminal activity like robberies. So this is a really important, not only to give cannabis businesses the ability to operate normally, but it's a public safety issue. So it's gotcha. It's pretty high priority.
So, yes, the cash thing has been a huge barrier, and the fact that we can't do, the industry can't do credit cards or electronic payments, in addition to having to deal with a lot of cash.
Yep. Customers have to hit up the ATM before they purchase.
Well, as you were mentioning, the Safe Banking Act has passed the House, I believe, last fall. And I've been doing some work on that myself. We had a fundraiser with Senator Rand Paul at your Denver office of the NCAA a couple of weeks ago. And Senator Paul was saying that if they could get it out of committee and onto the floor of the Senate, there'd be a good chance that the bill could get out of the Senate and over to President Trump's desk, where he'd be likely to sign it. So the big bottleneck seems to be in the Senate Finance Committee.
Yep, exactly right. The committee chairman is Senator Crapo. And we are, lobbying him and his office and helping him understand our issues so that we can keep that bill looking really good.
Yes. Well, and one of the things that I learned at the New England Cannabis Conference that the NCI put on is there's a lot of cannabis bills that'll be on the ballot this fall. Also, a lot of legislative action. States like even Alabama and Mississippi are considering some form of legal marijuana, mostly medical at this point. So there's a lot of things that are happening in 2020. And these issues all seem to poll 60 to 70% in favor. So hopefully our federal government will realize that this marijuana movement is here to stay. And the two things that would fix the industry, would make it a normal industry, obviously the Safe Banking Act, and then also being allowed to take all deductions, that old drug dealer bill or dealer tax penalty from the 1980s, still being applied today when you factor in hemp, virtually every state in the union has some form of legal cannabis, whether it's CBD, or THC, or medical, or adult use. And so it really is time for the federal government to catch up with the rest of the country.
Oh, yeah. What do we say? The toothpaste isn't going back into the tube at this point. So let's move forward together.
Hey, Bethany, before we let you go, one more question. If people want to get a hold of the National Cannabis Industry Association and perhaps be a member, how do they go about doing that?
Sure. Well, head to our website, thecannabisindustry.org. And if you click the green button that says join now, that'll take you to a page that gives an overview of our three levels of membership. And you can also head to the staff page where there's a staff directory, and you can reach out to somebody in our membership or business development department if you want to talk to a human being and get some of those questions answered. So head to our website, start there.
Very good. So, well, thank you very much, Bethany Moore. Really appreciate your time this afternoon. And this is Jim Marty saying over and out for the Deadhead Cannabis Show.
Thanks, Jim.